The following is a point of view program. Opinions expressed are those of the participants.
Because you think, oh, I'll write a play. I'm going to sit down and write a play. And they start talking about all the work that they do. And you go, oh, it is hard. It is really a lot of work. They have all kinds of plans.
Welcome to In Other Words. I'm Anzalda Petrie, and tonight I interview Selena Chatlin, producer of The Missoula Colony, and Kate Morris, a playwright from Missoula and colony participant. Stay with us. I'm sitting here in an upstairs office in the Partee View building on campus at the University of Montana, and I'm talking to Selena Chatlin.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, is that how you say that?
That is how you say that. Excellent.
I kind of rule, and I also knew that because you've been on the Ann and Teresa Ann show many times.
I have.
I've rehearsed because I'm so excited every time you're on because you're hilarious. No pressure.
But be funny.
And always fun to talk to. Always.
Well, thank you. You too, Anne.
You're welcome. So we're getting together this morning because we are going to talk about upcoming colony. It's just called Colony, right?
It's actually the Missoula Colony.
Missoula Colony.
Yes.
So what is the Missoula Colony and how did it come to exist?
Well, the Missoula Colony, which is also called a gathering of artists in support of the writer's craft, is basically it's a playwriting festival or intensive or conference or however you want to. We don't really use any of those words, but those are words you might hear thrown out. And it's 9 or 10 days every summer going back to 1995. And the idea for this, for our particular event, is to be able to bring in great writers from all over the country and some local writers, but in a way that's kind of under the radar. A lot of playwright festivals are very, they have a lot of national exposure, and so there's kind of a lot of pressure. And this way we have a lot of writers from all over who come in, and they feel this kind of low-key, try out some of my new work, something that no one's ever heard before, and not be scared about, you know, it's a very... supportive, and you know, we're not here to criticize people and rip work apart. We're here to help them, you know, move it along. It's like, you know, positive feedback is great. But so anyway, this in 1995, Greg Johnson, who's the artistic director of the Montana Rep, had been here for 4 or 5 years as a faculty member, and he and Michael Murphy, who's on the faculty now at Media Arts, they brought in some friends of theirs, including Marcia Norman, the Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award winning playwright, who's totally awesome. They brought in some of their friends to just try this out. In the first couple of years, they literally just sat in a circle of chairs and read plays out loud and kind of chit-chatted. And so then over, this is, I guess, Colony 19 that we're doing now, and it slowly became an actual event, like, you know, to charge money and have people come and sit and watch. And so it really did start out as just a bunch of writers kind of sitting around talking about writing, and has now become one of our 4 or 5 biggest events of the year, I suppose. But the founding people really were Greg Johnson and Michael Murphy and Marcia Norman. And I think in the early years they had Arthur Copit came a few times. He's a pretty big deal. And Roger Hedden and Ron Fitzgerald, who still are pretty regulars. And James McClure, bless his soul, who we lost after Colony 16. So.
You have had a lot of famous people come and participate and teach. So what is that like on campus when those, I guess, is there, how would you characterize that? An upper echelon of writers or how would you talk about that?
Well, I guess, you know, the kind of the cool thing that happens with Colony is that a lot of those writers, they want to come here and, like I said, and be under the radar, and that kind of, not that they don't enjoy people being their fans and wanting to talk about their work, but they like to just kind of be here like they're any other part of the group, you know, to see someone who's, you know, been nominated for an Oscar talking to one of our undergraduate students over a cup of coffee in the lobby kind of thing.
Because I would like to know what Colony means to you.
What Colony means to me? Well, you know, Colony is the person in my job that really, you know, a lot of it ends up resting on their shoulders. And Greg asked me to be the producer going back a couple of years now. So Colony was the first major project that I undertook when I started this job. And so there's a, you know, it was this, like, can I do this? Because it's a big event. And I was so proud to have accomplished that so well. And the first one I did was the biggest Colony that they had ever done. So, I mean, it's a high pressure thing for me. Every, you know, there's a lot to do, but once it gets rolling, it really, it's such a remarkable thing to be a part of. You know, like, it's you most years anyway that I've been a part of. The vibe is really good. People are so happy to be here. You know, the people who come to Colony, obviously there's the writers and the actors, but the people who attend are the diehards. You know, people don't come to Colony stuff because they have to or because they're coming for a class. People come because they love theater. They love to hear plays. These are people who want to sit and listen to people read plays. So you're just surrounded by just the absolutely most supportive contingent of the theater community. Like, everybody wants to be there. Everybody is, you know, all the writers are so grateful to be a part of it. And so I think it's that happy vibe and to be around people who so love theater in like the most drama nerd kind of way. So it's pressure free. And I think it's also pretty magical to watch our students interact with, I mean, to see the look on their little faces sometimes when they meet some people who are a big deal and then get to go off and have a cup of coffee and be like, I just spent 2 hours with Bill Masterson and he totally is going to read my stuff and blah, blah, blah. You know, so there's a lot of things that I really love about it. And plus, I went to school here. You know, my freshman year of college was the first Colony ever. And so it just, you know, it has this whole thing for me going back to, you know, my whole tie-in to theater and dance here and the university.
Give a play-by-play of what actually happens at Colony? Like, what do they actually do? What does a day look like?
Yes. Well, this year is a big one because we're doing panels and workshops. So that the first weekend, Saturday and Sunday, basically in the morning, like, we'll gather everybody together, have a cup of coffee, people wake up, whatever. About 10, I think, we come onto the stage in the Montana, and on the first Saturday and Sunday are panel discussions. So the gals they'll talk, but they'll take questions, and it's just meant to be kind of an open forum. And this is, again, about gender parity. And I think, that first weekend also is about self-producing, kind of a do-it-yourself kit for, you know, if you're a woman and you want to do theater, this is how you do it yourself. And then we take a break. And usually during this stuff, we'll have rehearsals going on because there's just not enough time in the day to do everything separately. And then every day at 3 o'clock and 8 o'clock, I want to remember to double check that. At 3 and 8, we do a stage reading, and that's every day except for the middle Wednesday, which will be the 16th. We always take that day off, except this year when on Wednesday evening, Marcia Norman and Julia Jordan are going to give their talk on gender parity, and that will be freaking awesome. So everybody should see that. But yeah, usually we do a workshop or a panel discussion, like 10 to 1 or 10 to 2. Then we do stage readings at 3 and 8. And there's rehearsals going on all over the place. And we try to do a river float. You know, we kind of let people do whatever they want to do. But if people want organized activities, we try to put that together as well.
How many people participate?
Well, this year, I'm trying to think. We make little buttons for the Colony. And white are the participant buttons. And I'm guessing that we make over 30 of those every year. So, you know, if you exclude the actors, because we never know year to years. I mean, there have been years when we needed like 18 actors in total, and there have been years when we needed 80 some actors in total. So you never know with that. But this year we have 10 writers in total, 11, I guess, with Marcia, but she's not reading a script. And then probably another half a dozen directors. So without the acting talent, you're probably in the more like the 20 or 25 range of people who are just here all the time. And I have, I guess, a staff of 3 or 4.
And your job is to coordinate all of that, but also do you take care of details for them, like lodging and meals and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, all
like that?
That stuff is arranged before, you know, the housing and all that. Meals, not so much. It's actually going to be interesting because I think this is the first Colony we'll be doing without food for thought. And we, because our guests stay in Panzer And so I guess we'll have to take them to the grocery store or something like that. Well, they all, everybody loves the good food store. So we always, if we take them all to, you know, then they get all this, you know, really expensive, weird stuff that I've never seen before and take it back to the dorms, and then they're all really happy. So yeah, it'll be interesting when there's not really a, but most of that stuff is taken care of months in advance. So it's really just, we can just focus on the colony stuff. I'm sure that I could get some of my little helpers to come in and help with that stuff, but I always feel like I just, that's my control freak thing happening. I'd rather just be in charge of that.
Do, are there things that happen in the dorm after hours? I'm imagining a camaraderie or people getting together and talking about ideas.
Yes, I do.
Like
well, because they, Panzer has those, the pod rooms where they're like a little, like little single bedrooms and then a shared living area. So we try to make sure that our guests all get to be together and that, yeah, they're, you know, it's usually like the first day you'll drop them off at the dorm and watch them walk in together and like, oh, it's nice to meet you, you know, and then by the last day they're waiting out front for you for their ride, just like best friends. And so that's actually awesome. I think that, you know, the dorm gets a little bit hot some years. I mean, it's not like the most, you know, five-star accommodations, but I think in the end they love to be on campus and they, and it really, it bonds the riders together. I found that to be the case almost every single year. So,
so when they're done, they leave with a network. Mm-hmm. And they leave with skills, mm-hmm. and maybe a do-it-yourself kit, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be like in a box or anything, but yes, I think this is, yes, I think this is the most specific end game that we've ever had in terms of workshops or panels. For me, it was like, this is what we're going to talk about. This, you know, I mean, we always have an agenda, but I'm excited to see exactly where this one goes, because I think that the gals too are still in discussion about how it's going to shape up. And it also depends on who's in the class, what kind of questions they're asking. You know, if everybody in the room seems to be like, yeah, you know, then you take a different tack. And so that's another cool thing about Colony, is it takes shape as it's happening so much of the time.
What else did they leave with? Buttons, clothes, free clothes?
Yeah, they get like buttons. That. I give them really cool, shiny, little colorful water bottles. They can keep their scripts, but we prefer if they recycle them and give me back the ring thingy that came in it, because they're not cheap. I really do think, you know, like this year we had, we have Molly Rice coming back, who was with us for Colony 12, and she met Heather Benton, who was a writer with us that year and is also an actress who's toured with us, who's lovely. And they became like super tight friends, and they do projects, you know, they did not know each other at all until they met at Colony. And now that, you know, and I think that there's a lot of those relationships that it would be awesome, I think, if we really were able to trace back going to Colony One and really see the connections that Colony has made and the people that, you know, I mean, there are people here who were doing entirely pursuing other professions, and someone like a Marcia Norman came up to them and said, you should write. And now that's what they do. You know, I mean, that's it's pretty remarkable.
Why is it the way it is this year? And will you talk a little bit about what it's going to look like this year?
I will. I think, you know, the idea, I'm actually not even sure the origin of the idea to focus on women this year. I think it's a really exciting time in theater in general and in playwriting, just on the American stage, because there's been such breakthroughs over the course of the last decade. And, you know, a lot of the discussion during Colony Week will be about gender parity. But the cool thing is that there, we've made, you know, it no longer has to be a conversation about how bad things are and how much we have to accomplish. Of course, there's still things to accomplish, but there's so many women who are just huge right now on the theater scene. And I mean, like, we have, you know, Molly Rice, Julia Jordan, Marcia Norman, Deb Loffer, you know, these are all these just powerhouse female writers from all over. And I think another reason for it that I like is that in Missoula we have a pretty strong community of playwrights, a lot, you know, that we even have formed some groups together and they meet and they read each other's work. And there's certainly some guys and some very talented guys in the mix, but the vast majority of local playwrights anyway who express an interest in Colony are women, you know, so I think that it just kind of lent itself. And men can take the workshops and do all that kind of stuff. We really just accepted women for the plays that we selected and to be doing the teaching. But yeah, I think we have such a strong presence of female writers in Missoula that it was like, well, we could do something to cater to them. So, but I think, I mean, it's exciting that we're really just celebrating, and it doesn't have to be about, you know, fighting against the oppression of women. Now it's, you know.
If it were fighting against the oppression, mm-hmm. what is that oppression?
I think just, you know, if you go back many years, and I'm sure Marsha Norman could just talk for hours and hours about just an absence of the female voice in American theater. You know, not that there aren't female play, you know, Marsha, I mean, Nightmother was many, many years ago. But, you know, when probably over 90% of the theater that's being produced at a certain level is written by men, even looking at, you know, looking at the plays themselves and the ratio of male to female, you know, like here we have quite a few more female students than male students in our program here. But it's hard to find plays that have more female characters than male characters. You know, there's, I mean, theater, like almost any other institution in American or world history, it was for the dudes, you know, and a lot of progress has been made, but it really is just that kind of same thing that, like any other profession, the women have been kind of kept down. And now the last decade or so has been this just huge surge of really amazing female voices. So
you believe that the imbalance in the number of male to female characters is because of the gender of the writer?
I think that that has to do with it. I think naturally, I mean, you know, I think it's completely understandable that if in most cases, I shouldn't say across the board, but if you're a man, you're going to, a lot of men are going to be able to write male characters better. And same for women, you know, I mean, most women, they tend to write more female characters than male because, you know, that's the perspective that you understand. So I don't think there's any malicious, like, who wants to write women? It's just that that's what they get. You know, that's what they relate to. It's personal.
I've probably seen every play you've been in the last 5 years. And they, I think across the board, have been written by men. And some of the lines that you've acted have been so not what a woman would say in that situation.
That's a difficult thing too, is asking yourself. If the idea is suspension of disbelief, that it's like, well, we're in the world of the play, so you need to set aside your, that would never happen. But if you're doing something where the idea is that it's this kitchen sink realism, this hard hitting, you know, that it's, then when you have this line that's like, okay, maybe I need to step back and say, Sal would never say this, never. But then there are times when you go, no self-respecting woman in this set of circumstances, blah blah blah, would ever, and that's a tough thing to do. Which I guess, you know, doesn't even matter, you know, the sex of the playwright. There's just, but yeah, that's a tough thing. I think the voice of women in theater has been too quiet until probably like the last decade or so. And there was like a specific niche for women also, I think, to write, you know, in that kind of Lifetime television for women flavor. And I think women are leading the charge a lot more now in some very, a lot more experimental, obscure, avant-garde type stuff, which is cool.
You're listening to In Other Words. Coming up, we have a reading from the play Church, written by Kate Morris. Afterwards, the playwright talks to the actors about what it was like to play her characters in order to give us an idea about what it's really like to be at Colony. Stay with us.
This is a reading of a scene from Church, my new play. This is scene two, and I am Kate Morris, and yes, I'm going to read a brief intro to the scene, because this is the first time that we're meeting these characters. An interior of a kitchen in a homeless shelter, well used. Cassie, 20, and Lila, 27 to 40, stand next to each other, but with some clear distance between them. Cassie is peeling carrots while Lila washes dishes. Lila washes the dishes like she can scrub the sin off humankind. Cassie peels each carrot indifferently. She enjoys the act of making repetitive motions. They work in silence for a while.
Do you not like me?
I like you fine.
It's just that we don't talk much.
I've noticed.
But you don't seem shy or...
I'm not shy.
So...
Why don't we talk?
Well, yeah.
Not much to talk about, I guess.
But you talk to Kyle.
I do.
He says you do.
Yep.
What do you talk about?
Oh, you know, stuff and things and stuff.
That makes no sense to me.
You're kind of a literal gal, aren't you, Cassie?
Probably. I'm sorry. I don't know what you mean by that either, Lila.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I mean, you really expect real answers when you ask questions, don't you?
Well, yeah.
Well, that's refreshing. I like that.
Really?
Yeah, it's rare. Well, rare for me with the people I usually hang out with.
What kind of people are those?
I don't know, just people.
Are they...
What?
Oh, sorry. I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, sorry. I'm kind of a ditz today. I didn't get much sleep.
Okay.
But what do you and Kyle talk about?
You know, we have to peel and slice a full bucket of those carrots today, right?
Oh, yeah.
Look, you shouldn't be worried about it. We talk about stuff I can't remember. And I don't hate you. I don't hate anybody.
Well, I hope not. And I didn't think you might hate me, hate me. Hate is, well, I don't know, bigger than what I was just wondering why.
Kyle and I only talk because he asks me questions.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Well, I asked you a question.
Do I not like you?
Yes! Answer honestly, please.
It's not that I don't like you, Cassie. I'm just not sure if you're a person.
I don't know what that means.
Like, developed enough as a human being to have a conversation about anything besides, you know...
So I'm a child.
Yourself and God, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm not a child. I have a wide variety of interests. Kyle is just as much of a Christian as I am.
Okay.
I guess I can see what you mean, since you're so much older than me. But I mean, I don't know. Those things are really important in my life, and I want to know about you. But I just figured...
There's nothing wrong with that. I really don't care.
Okay, then.
What?
Huh?
Figured what?
I figured that your past must have been pretty rough, so I've never asked you about it.
How do you know this?
Well...
Did Kyle tell you?
No. He says you don't talk about... He says you don't talk, but not about what?
We talk about work, not about me.
Okay, cool.
You can ask me a question and I'll answer it.
Okay. So...
As long as you keep peeling the carrots.
Okay, oh, yeah, sorry.
Never stop peeling the carrots.
Is that...
It's nothing.
Because it's a good metaphor, really.
For...
Life. It's a good motto. Never stop peeling the carrots. How long have you lived in town?
About 9 months. I'm still getting my feet under me.
Do you like this kind of work?
Kitchens? It's okay, I guess.
Charity. No, I meant...
Oh, well, sure. I don't really consider it charity.
Well, you work really hard.
Thanks.
Do you have family around here, or...
No family.
Okay.
Have you lived here all your life?
Yep, born and raised.
It's beautiful.
Thanks. I love it here. There's a real sense of community. But that's the thing about living in a beautiful place. Soon, everybody moves here, there, and then they get bigger, and then you start to lose the beauty. I mean, with the crime and everything...
This is the smallest place I've lived. I'm not so sure how long I'll stay.
It's a great place to settle down.
Cool. What makes you think I want to settle down?
Oh, well, I just figured you were you know, in your 30s or late 20s. And
that means I need to stay someplace long enough to start a family.
Well, yeah. I mean, we all want love, right?
It is important.
Yeah. So,
do you consider what you do here charity?
Yeah.
Even though you get paid. Hmm? You get paid to work here, right?
Yeah.
Well, how is it charity if you get paid? I don't think Chloe or David or any of the others share your opinion.
Kyle does. He's always talking about doing the good work here.
What is the good work?
Devoting your attention to those in need.
And that's
the thing that is more than the money. For me, sometimes, I don't know, do you have any friends here? I mean, besides Kyle?
What makes you think Kyle and I are friends?
Well, because you guys talk.
And we're talking too.
True. Look, Kyle and I go to the mid-morning service at... What?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Cassie. I'm not a Christian.
Really? But I thought they hired...
I guess not. Actually, I'm pretty sure it's against the law for them to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
I know Chloe doesn't believe in God.
Really? How?
We talk.
Oh.
I'm going to guess you and she...
I don't really make a lot of time to talk about home life with the other staff.
It's not worth the devotion of your attention.
I guess not. I guess I mean that they're too much like me for me to be interested in them.
Aha. I'm not.
Right.
Like you.
How old are you?
How old are you?
20.
And how old is Kyle?
23. We've been dating since high school. I think he wants to marry me.
Aha. Figures. But?
But what?
You think he wants to marry you, but then there was something else you didn't say.
Oh, it was nothing.
Okay.
I know Kyle loves me. It's great.
But?
I think he might only be wanting to marry because then we can have sex.
Oh?
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Did you go to college?
I have my associate's. Business management.
What about Kyle?
He went to state. He has a degree in theology and literature.
That'll take him far.
He's going to take over for his uncle at the Holy Covenant.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. Probably not for a few years, you know, but he's leading all the youth groups and most of the Bible studies now and...
Cool.
Why do you want to know about college?
It doesn't matter.
No, tell me.
Okay, so you are worried that Kyle only wants to marry you because then you two can finally have sex. Because obviously you're both virgins and you're waiting because of purity vows or whatever, right?
Yeah, yes.
But you've been dating since high school and all throughout 4 full years where you both went to different colleges.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Cassie, but Kyle is no longer a virgin. On the bright side, if he marries you, you'll know it's because he really does love you and it's not just for sex.
You don't know that.
I can make a pretty educated guess.
I don't think so. We promised each other that we'd both come to marriage free of sin. I gotta talk to him about it.
Sex can be a really spiritual experience. In fact, it might be the closest you can ever get to feeling divine love.
Really? That's how you feel about it?
Absolutely.
What did you study in college?
Cassie, you gotta know I've never gone to college.
Then how do you even know what you're talking about?
I worked in a lot of kitchens with men that were going to college.
And you had sex with a lot of them?
Enough.
Did they have girlfriends?
A couple. What time is it?
2:15.
Okay, I'm going for a smoke. I'll be back at 2:25 to do the biscuits. I'm sorry if I seem rude or ruined your day, Cassie, but I really do think you're a nice girl, and I don't want to see you blindsided by the real world one afternoon while you're nursing your fifth child. Oh, wait, you're not Mormon, are you? Third child.
Question for both of you who read this, because is it clear that Lila is, I feel like we need to get the sense from the scene that Lila is, Cassie thinks that Lila is working there, and then it becomes very, very clear that Lila is a resident of the shelter. is that something that is clear to either of you? Because it doesn't seem clear to me right now. But maybe I'm overthinking it.
I think we know there's something else going on underneath, but I don't think it's clear that is the case.
That Cassie has to shove her entire foot in her mouth after the charity thing because she realizes that she's essentially talking to somebody who...
Who's getting charity.
Well, who might not think that they want to be known as a charity case.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. I guess I did. Do you think that that's essential, that's understood by the end of that scene?
It's almost like, well, when I think about it in context with the other scenes, I have made a leap in the narrative that is not clear from this scene, because all of a sudden we know then, I mean, we as the audience know, but then Cassie also knows all of a sudden that Lila is not... She's not a paid employee like her. They're not on the same level, according to Cassie.
Yeah.
So I have to make that more clear. Yeah.
Well, and also, I'm not always the person to ask, because I find that I don't pick up on things sometimes in scripts, like, especially if I read before I heard it read out loud, that to other people are completely obvious. Even sometimes in movies, I'll be walking out, the person's like, God, I saw that coming like an hour before it happened, and in no way. So there might be people who are like, yeah, it was completely obvious. If you make it any more obvious, then it will be stupid. I don't think that is the case, but I miss things.
I think I would rather err on the side of it being so stupid obvious this time and then get that. I don't know. What are your... How old did you feel being Cassie?
There's quite a lot of different like shifts that happen, I think, in Cassie.
Yeah.
In her intentions of talking to Lila.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe it's that she just feels like she's looking at this individual that for some reason this individual may not like her, and then that offends her because everybody must like her. And
oh, so there's an instant sort of idea of offense.
Yeah, like, why aren't you talking to me? Like, why do you talk to Kyle? You know, it's like that thing of, I think in couples that happens a little bit where maybe one person likes part of the couple more than the other part, but she sees so much like that they are equal that there's no other, you know, solution for this. So I think it's interesting because you can tell there's just so much that I'm not sure. I think when Cassie starts opening it up, she doesn't really expect to get into those waters. And so then she tries to navigate through them as best, but without. Well, like,
action going on there that's really lovely. Cool. It's interesting to say that you were going phony, because it really could be either way, but it is much more interesting if with her.
I should leave it up to interpretation. There's only so much that you can do.
When I think you place those, like, you know, those I can't think of the word that you call them, but it's, you know, those defending, I guess, oh, platforms maybe, or you know what I mean? Like the obstacles, like, no, but I'm a Christian. Like, Kyle's a Christian too, you know, like that's just what we do and this is how we are. And it's not charity. It's more the money for me. And, you know, those like kind of repeated things that she probably tells herself in her head that she's actually saying out loud to this person who is different from everybody else that she's talked to.
Having not gotten to read the second act, do you consider this Cassie's story or Kyle's story, or is it more
Cassie is the main character in this play, which is fun because she has to be introduced as the secondary character that you don't want to follow.
Yeah.
In order for you to be like, yes, at the end.
It's like Alien. You don't think Sigourney Weaver is going to be the last one.
No, you do not.
But you're so glad that she is.
Yes, you are. And it is a lot like Alien in so many ways, this play. The fear, the weird like cat backstory, like subplot where you really can... Yeah, no, there's no cat in this play, unfortunately.
I think that's great.
Unless we call Lila the cat. I don't know. There's so many things that I'm trying to do with this play but you can't be really heavy-handed about it. Most of it is starting out with a very male-centered character who we're expecting to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he goes to a place that we can't follow him, who do we have left? And which is how kind of I wanted it to mirror the story of like the most well-known disciple, which is why this place is called church.
Mm-hmm.
Because first we're going along with Jesus, and all of a sudden Jesus goes to a place where no one can go because he becomes the Son of God. Mm-hmm. And we're left with who is left over, which is Cassie, which is someone who we don't really like very much. I mean, I don't really like Mark or Matthew as much as I like hearing about Jesus. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So, I kind of want this to be a religious parable that is not even seems like a religious parable until you put it together. But I don't know.
It's really interesting.
And it's interesting. Well, and I mean, you do that so well through character, because these characters they're very much in our reality.
Yeah.
You know, of people.
Yeah, it's odd. Well, that's one of the things that you find when you work with the homeless, is that there's a lot of church going on, because we're like, oh, this supernatural situation will save the people who we do not know how to save. And
that's,
I don't know.
Hard, yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah. But I think structurally what you're saying is so interesting, because it's not to just name check another movie, but it's that Psycho flavor where you're left adrift as an audience when you think you know whose story it is and who you're following, and then they like kill that person off or remove them 20 minutes in, and you go, oh my god, who are we left with? You know, I mean, that's such an interesting thing to be able to do for an audience, that then they're like, oh, okay, okay. You kind of freak them out, and then they go on a path that they didn't expect. It's
yeah
really cool.
And I worry because I am not a Christian writing a play that I think needs to have this these ideas in it, because it's so prevalent in how we work with the homeless, that, oh man, if you're going to take somebody out of the picture, you can tend to alienate them by getting churchy with it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that. And I don't really know how I would overdo that. And I also don't want to make a comment. I don't want it to be clear that I am making a specific statement about how I as a playwright feel about certain ideas, because that's gross. But you know what I mean. You both know what I mean.
I
when you're reading new plays, and people certainly are like, this is my message, let me beat it into you.
Yeah
Which is the mark, yes, usually of someone who's, and this doesn't necessarily have to go in there, but who is either not a very good writer or very experienced, when what they have to say is somebody's line.
You're right.
Like, is that what you mean? That is hard. And I think that you've gotten so good at that, of being very honest or even brutally honest, but never spoon feeding what it is that you're trying to say, so that some people might even get different things.
I would love different things. Which is so interesting that we could play Cassie as the fake bitch, and Oh, I almost like that better.
Yeah.
Just because we have to root for her by the end of the play, or else it doesn't work.
Yes, and but how that, do we do that?
But yeah. If we start off with, do you meet her being this?
Yeah, you don't want to hang out with her in a kitchen. Like you feel really sorry for Lila having to peel an entire bag of carrots.
I mean, we've all been
you
around.
You go with Lila yeah. through the whole
you do,
thing.
You do. And also, you know, like, what right does she have to, you know, dive and put judgment on and, you know, like, all of this other stuff that happens. So I don't know. That would be an interesting choice. We didn't necessarily have time to.
Well, I guess it'll depend on who your cast ends up being.
Yeah, it will. I'm excited to see it. Thank you guys so much for
thank you. This was a blast.
Making real character people out of word things.
Out of word things. Paper things.
Our writer, Kate Moore.
I do good words. What I'd like to start with is for you to introduce yourself again and talk a little bit about your background as a writer.
Oh, okay. Well, I am Kate Morris, and I've lived in Montana my entire life, all 31 years. My mother is a writer, and when we were growing up, my brother and I, she was always writing in her spare time, and I would see it. But I never thought, I started acting when I was 9, so I always thought that I was better at acting than anything else in my life, and I, like, went for it full bore. But I would have really bad dreams, like night terrors when I was a child, and my mother, being a storyteller already, was like, well, to avoid having to get up with my daughter all the time, I'm just going to tell her to tell herself good stories when she wakes up from her nightmares, and it'll put her back to sleep and she won't have bad dreams anymore. And it started to work. So I started telling myself stories early to go to bed, and it became like a way for me to fall asleep, and I can't really fall asleep without doing it now. But I never started. I wrote poetry as a way to express thoughts that were hard for me to say when I was a teen, and they were really bad, as they are. And then I remember writing one short story and not anything again until I had a detour when I was 18 and went to film school and started writing screenplays for movies. Because movies really, I don't know, something about Quentin Tarantino and the writing from his plays, from his movies, made me really appreciate him, and Charlie Kaufman really made me appreciate how language is used in the weird hyper reality of cinema. So I started writing screenplays and they were good. And then when I came here to study acting again, I started writing plays, and I can't write prose very well, like short fiction or, God forbid, a novel. Can't make it happen. So yeah, that's how. And I just like language.
Mm-hmm. And so plays are your genre? Is that the correct term? Or
yeah, I guess. I wonder if I almost call it media or medium. Yeah, because I'm trying to think of writing and text as an art form, as a way of expressing, since kind of diving further into poetry as an adult, and thinking about it in a weird, like, very advanced way. But you know what I'm talking about, where you think of it kind of as a way of expressing yourself the way you would maybe with paints and stuff. Thinking of text that way, and then so I guess it's kind of poetry and plays. Plays are weird because you, one person, write something, but it has to be interpreted by another person who is definitely not you. And so you have to think about the method of that transference
of what you put on a page and how it will come out of someone else's mouth. I really think that's cool. Yeah.
I do too. I think it's amazing. And the way that you talk about it as an art form or as a form, I think that that is amazing too. And what I'm wondering is whether you had some sort of really difficult experience or tragedy or something that was so hard to talk about that propelled you to be able to do this? Because I'm wondering about that blank spot, like when you weren't writing at all and what it was that moved you back into it, besides Quentin Tarantino, which he rules. But, you know, was there something happening for you personally that caused you to move that direction?
I don't know. I mean, so I guess I had a very loving childhood. And all children want attention at certain points. And I guess I loved it when I suddenly had it. And I was told that I was good at what I was doing when I was performing for people. But it was a lot of adult praise, which, you know, kids tend to feed off of. And so that was something that was always a strength that I found in myself. But I didn't get along well with other kids. I would say anything that came to mind for a while, and then it started to get me into trouble and in embarrassing situations. And before long, I don't know, just something happened where I don't remember having any really close friends until my junior year of high school, dropping off between, I would say, fifth grade. Between fifth grade and junior year of high school, not very many close people who I could trust. Because verbal expression is something that I really enjoy doing. It's just, I learned the hard way that what you said, and if you expressed your emotions, that was often not welcome in social situations, especially in school. And so you just don't do it. And then you don't write it either, because I was always a dumb kid. I was good at writing and English, but that was not what was particularly important in my elementary and junior high. So that was not something that I was, I didn't think of myself as being particularly smart or intelligent until after I graduated from high school. It was pretty crazy.
That is crazy. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think that was more of a perception on your part, or do you think that there was some truth to it from the perspective that you didn't fit into what was maybe being expected of you at school?
I want to say, I mean, everything is really subjective for me, and being 12, 13 years removed from it now, I can't really be accurate about it, but I would say, based on my class placement and my GPA and what teachers expected of me, with the exception of English, yeah, you're not going to go very far. You know, a lot of children are told, my parents never told me this, but advisors in school and, you know, other adults in your life, yeah, how far do you think you're really going to get with theater?
Oh, like, my heart aches hearing
you're
that
right.
question.
I know,
even.
But I mean, I'm one of the early millennials, and we were still computer science and engineering and business, actually a lot of business and marketing, because the stock market was such an open field when we were going out into the world. That was what you should be focusing on for ultimate success. But I don't know. I could talk about economics for a long time and my discrepancies.
By, for, and about women. And oh, cool. Since Colony this year is all women writers, the subject has to come up about why that would be something that the organizers of Colony would want to do. And I'm wondering about it from the perspective of perhaps trying to push past limitations that are in place for women, or ceilings that they can't get past. And so I'm wondering what you think about that, and if you've ever experienced those things.
Oh, well, it's hard not to experience some sort of... I have this debate a lot with people. It's hard not to experience some sort of discrimination based on your sex. And I've gotten quite a bit of it just, I don't know, being a woman who is, I don't know, reasonably attractive. There's a lot of expectations that I will act a certain way. And for a long time, looks were prized more than intelligence or aptitude. I think the reason why Greg is making such a, and Selena are making such a wonderful step this year in Colony is because in past colonies, we haven't had a large representation of women, but one of the largest funding opportunities to bring prominent female or upcoming female writers from other places here is a scholarship instituted by a woman, Kathy Capps, in honor of a woman, her grandmother or mother, I think. And so that's a way to really honor it. Oddly enough, in statistics right now show that there's fairly equal footing as far as new plays being produced, men to women. A lot of the new really hot plays happening in the U.S. are written by women. And actually the two foreign plays that are in the top 10 most produced plays the last 2 years, both written by women, a French writer and a British writer. So we're making slow progress, but I wonder if we're not taking kind of a reaction, like we're reacting more than proacting in this case, because I'm really proud that we're doing it this year, that Colony is like all women this year. But if we had done it like maybe 5 years ago, we would have been really answering the call that was placed in the theater realm when, I think, yeah, it was 3 or 4 years ago, when the most primary new playwriting prize, the Wasserstein Prize, the committee just did not give it out 1 year. They could not find a female playwright to award the money to for an entire year. And I feel like that's a little bit limiting. If you're just going to hold it back and tell, well, you ladies don't have enough to show us this year. We'll just, we'll wait. We'll wait until next year to see what you got then. So yeah. We're still encountering, well, I mean, I could talk a lot about why so many people are choosing to produce Sarah Rule's vibrator play these days, because we're experiencing a huge pushback from the conservative right about birth control and women's sexuality. Slut shaming is a huge deal. And it's so odd because, I mean, there's a little bit of that in my play. Sexual liberation is something that is an undertone to church, mostly because that's where original sin comes from and there's precedent for it. So it's like, how long do we have to talk about women in a vein of sin carriers or representing something that is maybe morally ambiguous or even reprehensible? So maybe that's what we're still encountering. And it's odd for me to, I don't know what the other women are going to bring to the table this year. But in the past, I like that there's more women characters. We always have more women actors who are available to read, and there's never seems to be enough roles for them. That's one of the things that got me into playwriting, was trying to write stories with female protagonists that I really could, that I as an actor could maybe sink my teeth into, and that other women actors could sink their teeth into. Meaty stuff.
Have you ever felt limited by your gender? Have you missed opportunities because you're a woman?
I don't know. I can't honestly say if I have or have not. I suspect that I have. because of the choices that I made in order to preserve my feminine identity and imagery. We were talking about ego earlier. If I had taken a more masculine perspective on how to get my career into shape and to take what I want and to tell people exactly what I thought of them and why without fearing for repercussions of being a cold, then yeah, I feel like there are some opportunities that I probably missed. There's also opportunities that I miss every time I choose not to participate in some sort of solitary character building activity because I'm afraid someone's going to take advantage of me as a woman. Now, I mean, that's fear that we instill in women as a society. So that's something that I have to culp to, that, yeah, I have to say, yep, I've made this choice. I've made the choice not to go on a hitchhiking road trip around the United States to learn about humanity because I did not want to put myself in a position where I could possibly get raped or kidnapped. But were I a young man, I would have totally Kerouac'd out of everything.
And you are building on a conversation we had before I turned all the machines on,
yeah,
about ego. And I had asked you about the existence of ego and how much your ego strength figured in to being a writer. And your answer was sort of surprising. So I'd love to hear a recap or a summary of that.
Well, I mean, I struggle a lot with ego because it gets thrown a lot. It gets thrown around in the theater a lot. And from a young age, as a young child, I remember directors throwing fits. They were always male directors. They would always throw fits when something wouldn't happen for them. And that was a way to exert power and authority and to get everybody to shut up and just do their job. And it became later, as I started to like really watch what was happening, later I realized it was all about ego. It was not about inefficiency in the workplace. It was about, I feel like I have been slighted. I am going to exert my power and authority again. And that struck me as being petty and wasting time because I really like efficiency. I'm really into it, even though I don't manage my time well at all. And, you know, then there's the thing about the feminine ego. Women having large egos are not well liked, as we see from the women who have large egos who are featured heavily in the media. So where do you choose to be graceful? Because it's considered grace. We associate lack of ego in women with grace, where we are easily passive. So that's something that I wanted always to be, and I still want to be, a graceful, well-poised woman where I don't have to throw my ego around in order to accomplish or make my point known. But it's also a Buddhist thing where ego is one of the roots of suffering because you feel your ego is what feels most of the slights and the wants and the desire. It's something, desire feeds the ego, and because it inflates your sense of self, right? And the act of selflessness and compassion is what Buddhism is trying to extinguish along with the flame. And I'm not a good Buddhist. I'll just throw that right out there. I'm not at all. But I do see so much more understanding on the part of the monks who I read. And they have all decided to do something with their ego, which is talk it out, flatline it into a form of peace and compassion. So where can you have compassion instead of ego? Because one is focused from the selfish perspective and the other one is focused from the social perspective, where you associate yourself more with people.
Missoula Colony 19 is July 12th through the 19th of 2014, featuring visiting writers Julia Jordan, Molly Rice, Deb Laufer, and Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award winner Marsha Norman. Again, that is July 12th through the 19th. For more information and a complete schedule, visit the Montana Rep website, montanarep.org.
You've been listening to In Other Words on Montana Public Radio. I'm Ann Zalda Petrie. Special thanks to Selena Chatlin and Kate Morris. For more information about In Other Words, visit our website, inotherwordsradio.com.